5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Workin' Sports Podcast. We're going to take a trip down memory lane today and bring back one of my favorite episodes that the vast majority of you have probably never heard. Let's go a little backstory here. Last September, after a few years of haggling, we launched this podcast. I spent a couple weeks getting prepped, learning the tech, getting our workflow down, and then it was time to start getting guests. I knew I needed a strong guest out of the gate, but I also knew with a new show and my name not being Bill Simmons, it may be a struggle to convince someone to come on. I have hundreds of friends in the sports media and was tempted to go to one of my higher profile buddies, but that kind of felt like a cop out, like I was chickening out and taking the easy way. Plus, I was afraid the interview would be too casual and it would sound more like an inside joke or buddy talk. And I didn't want that to be the first impression of the show. I wanted this to focus on real, tangible information that can help people. So I reached out to someone I knew a little bit, Carl Manteau, Senior Group Sales Director for the Milwaukee Bucks. I had never met Carl, but I had interviewed him once for a written article on sales careers and knew that he had a desire to help others. I knew that he had that right spirit, like that want to share, that want to give advice, that want to help others. He felt like the perfect guest, and he said yes. So that made him really the perfect guest. Now, here's the deal. We're a brand new podcast. We have no audience. We have no promotional budget. We just have a really good attitude and are ready to provide actionable career advice. I've spent 20 years in the sports industry, so I'm qualified to talk about this stuff. And I'm going to get guests who can really add to the conversation. But at the beginning, I mean, we were really nobodies. And very few people listened to that first episode. Most of you didn't even know we existed. To put it in perspective, looking back now and looking at data points, we get more downloads in one day now than we have all time for that first episode a year and a half ago. So I think it's really worthwhile to bring this one back and share with you guys a lot of the information that Carl was sharing. Now, I also want to set some expectations here. Carl is awesome. He does a great job. Me? Not so much. It was my first episode. I was a little nervous on the tech. I was really afraid something was going to go wrong. So I was kind of nervously watching levels and making sure the connection was strong and then making sure the phone didn't drop out. And I probably sound a little rehearsed on my questions. It just wasn't as natural as I think I am now. So just ignore my parts and listen to how great of information Carl was serving up. Here he is, one of the best guys in the sports industry and someone you should definitely connect with on LinkedIn. Carl Manteau, Senior Group Sales Director for the Milwaukee Bucks. Hey, Carl, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So we really want to focus in on the sales side of the sports industry today. And, you know, from the fact that we own a sports job board, I know for a fact, because I searched this morning, that over 50% of the jobs in the sports industry have a sales requirement to them. That is like the big jobs segment of the industry as a whole. So it gets kind of confusing, though. I look through these jobs and I see inside sales, I see group sales, I see sponsorship sales, I see premium seating sales, I see account executive roles. I see so much. So let's help guide a little bit here. If I was just starting out, I'd have no idea where to start. So help me understand a little bit better. What is the basic career path of someone who wants to work in sports sales? Let's say they've just graduated and they're looking for their first opportunity. Where are they looking and what is that experience like?
Yeah, you bring up a great point. You know, it can get confusing because every team has different titles for all the different types of roles they have inside their organization. But for someone coming out, the general career path is most teams have an entry-level sales program. A lot of people call it their inside sales program. Some people call it their sales associate program, but you can almost liken it to a tryout for a sports team or like two-a-days in football, where they'll generally hire a large pool of people. Some teams hire like five or six. I know there was one NFL team that hired 75 people.
Wow.
And it's usually like a year long program where the fundamentals of selling. So we teach you how to overcome objections, how to use ticketing software, you know, the different products, skill set, all the type of stuff to see if it sails the path that you truly want to be on. And over the course of the year, some people have an extended program, some people have a shorter, but most average about a year. Over the course of that, you're going to have people that naturally select out. They realize sales just isn't a fit for them, which is perfectly fine. Some people really excel at it, and they're the ones that get promoted. And then after that, you get promoted onto one of the full-time teams. So, for example, I manage the group sales department. So my team focuses on groups. So be it church night, corporate nights, scout night. I mean, you name it, we want to get large groups of people out to our games. There's also new business is one department. Some people call it account executives, new business consultants. There's a bunch of different titles, but a lot of it is people who are just mainly focusing on season tickets and plan sales. In general, they can sell everything. They can sell suite rentals and groups and other products, but the core of their revenue comes from ticket sales plans. Most teams have a service department. We call ours our service and retention department, and their role is to take care of your season ticket holders to make sure that, you know, all of their needs are met, that their benefits are being fulfilled. So they're more on the service side of things. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of teams will also have a premium department, and they're the people who will focus on selling your floor seats or your contracted club locations or your seats.
Are all of these considered, would you consider them each one like a step up from the other? So if you started out in inside sales, you might be, your first step would be, you know, another step towards group sales, or does it kind of just, are these advancements in the roles because they have different responsibilities, or is it kind of after you finish with inside sales program, the choice is kind of yours, which direction you want to go in?
That's a great question. I would consider group sales, the new business team, and the service team to be all equal with one another.
Okay.
Each one just caters to different skill sets and different personality types. The premium sales team, that is usually a step up. It's someone who's usually proven the ability to close high revenue accounts. They'll graduate into that type of position.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, what about education? So would you consider sales a learn-on-the-job type career, or is there something in particular a student should kind of focus their classwork on in order to be put in the best position to succeed?
That's a great question.
I'm full of them. It's awesome, isn't it?
Some schools are offering sales curriculums. So any type of experience you can get in selling, whether it be coursework or any type of job, internship, shadowing, just being familiar with the process would be beneficial. Any type of classwork that forces you to engage and talk with people, to get face-to-face, to get out of your comfort zone.
Right.
Because that's one of the main skills you need to be a seller. You have to be outgoing. You have to be unafraid to talk to people. You kind of have to have thick skin because we get rejected over 90% of the time. So
that's tough.
Yeah, it's a little bit of hybrid of everything there.
Yeah. So I hate to admit it, but a lot of times people will badmouth the whole concept of sales. The term has kind of a negative connotation. But tell us why you got into sales, what you love about it, and what it's done for your career. Because I find in the executives that I talk to around the sports industry or that I've worked for, a vast majority of them have a background in sales and in revenue creation. So what led you to it, and what has it kind of done for you?
Well, I was, like you just said, you know, sales to me before I got into it was a negative word. You think used cars, and are you think the annoying telemarketers calling you at home. I didn't really understand what it was. And then when you get in the industry, you realize like every single business relies on sales. If you have any type of product whatsoever, like it may be the best product in the world and it can be life-changing, but if no one is out there selling it for you, it will never take off. I got lucky. I got hired in the inside sales department for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And my boss told me in an interview that even though I had no sales experience, I sold myself into that sales role. I found out, you know, I can get paid to talk about, to engage with people and connect with people. And I found that to be fascinating. And so I you know, I was fortunate enough to get the job. And then when I got into it, you know, it was eye opening to have to make 100 calls a day. It was difficult, but I found myself loving it.
I loved engaging with people, loved talking to people, loved hearing people's stories. I loved that I could talk to the CEO of a Fortune 500 company on one phone call, and then a scout leader or a dance mom or a church leader or somebody else on the next phone call. And that's what pushed me towards wanting to be in the group sales side of the business, is that we get to engage with anybody and everybody. And we also get to be very creative in developing types of programs to give them value. So that's what steered me in that direction.
So in my experience, as I kind of mentioned, there are so many executives and high-level people. Matter of fact, my old general manager at my TV network had a background in sales. Why do you feel that so many high-level executives, what is that link between having sales experience and generating revenue and getting to that like high point of a career? Why do you think that is the trend?
Because sales is the engine that drives everything. So even like our top level executives, they may not be making like financial transaction sales anymore, but they're always selling something. You're selling your brand. You're selling an idea. You're selling your team. You're selling why vendors and partners and media should do business with you. You're selling why your team is an important part of the community. So everybody you engage with, you're selling them. It may not always be money, but you're selling them on something. And so it's critical you have that kind of background to be able to have those conversations.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. I mean, there's no big free agent signing unless your team is generating revenue, and that all comes from the sales staff getting it done.
Exactly. Like we do so much in the community. We try to be community ambassadors, and you know, we have mentoring programs and school programs and playground development programs, and we make appearances at hospitals. But we can only do those things if we are an operational business, if we are a functioning business. So we have to generate revenue. And so sales will always be at the forefront of everything that we do to take care of job number one, and then all the other benefits fall in line.
Let's get to the mechanism of the job. So you let's say you're a person, you just graduated college, you get an entry-level sales job in inside sales with your favorite team. You couldn't be more excited. What does that kind of first day and your day-to-day look like? What is the kind of the job detail as you draw it out?
Well, here is where it varies. Depending on the sport you get in with, the level of the sport, and the team you're with. I've heard some horror stories, unfortunately, where people show up on the very first day, they're given a lead sheet and a telephone, and they're just told to go. I know, and I wish that wasn't happening anymore, but it still does. So a bit of advice, do your homework. Find out what kind of training you're going to get going into it. Mm-hmm. Most of the professional teams have great training programs in place. For example, the team I'm with, you know, at the Bucks, we have a solid 2-week training course where you don't even get on the phones. It's all product knowledge, you know, office items, role playing. And, you know, we try to make them as comfortable as possible with the process mm-hmm. before we put them on the phones. And day one is you're made to feel comfortable. You're welcome to the team. You're introduced to the people you'll be working with, the executives. Hopefully you get a nice tour of your facilities. And before your first day, you should already know what the expectations are. But you definitely want to make people feel like, no, I'm now a part of something bigger, and I'm going to love my experience here.
So it sounds like you have, I mean, you kind of alluded to this earlier. It sounds like you have some high turnover. There are people that come in, they give it a shot, they don't make it, they do make it, and they progress or they don't. What would you say in your experience, because you've been doing this a long time, what are the traits that you see as kind of a trend where these people tend to succeed and these people tend to fail? Is there kind of a map you can follow almost?
There is. In fact, I've been actually putting a lot of thought into this recently because, I mean, turnover is a constant, and it starts and ends with your attitude. The people who make it in this business have the right attitude. You know, they go in thinking they're going to be successful, even though they know they're going to get rejected in the majority of the time. They still go in successful. They go in with a positive attitude and they exude confidence. And there's a big difference between confidence and arrogance. They exude confidence. You know, they're working hard to be successful. Mm-hmm. The people who fail out, they have poor attitudes. They're negative, they're condescending or sarcastic. They demean their prospects, their clients, their coworkers. They challenge a lot of new ideas. They, you know, there's a sense of entitlement where they think they've got it all figured out when usually they don't. Other reasons they fail is a lot of people don't set themselves up for success.
Yep.
Succeeding reps, they have a plan. You know, they write down their goals, short term, long term, and then they hold themselves accountable to doing it. A lot of reps that fail, they just wing it. They don't know what they're doing. So they just hope, if I make a few phone calls, if I go on a few appointments, maybe I'll get lucky and I'll hit my revenue goal.
Right.
You know, now the succeeding reps, they hustle. They hustle, they claw, fight, scratch for everything. And they don't ever stop learning. You know, I've been doing this for, you know, over 15 years now, and I'm still hungry to learn more, because you're never an expert in what you're doing. There's always new things to try, new technologies to employ. So you always got to be wanting more. And, you know, the people who fail out are the ones who just do what's given to them. Hey, you have to make 50 calls a day. They make 50 calls and then they stop, because yep. That's what I was told to do. They don't make 50 calls because it's hopefully pushing their business forward, you know?
Yep. No, it makes perfect sense. So you talk about the calls, and obviously that's a theme here, is that when you're in sales, you're going to be on the phone. But how has technology changed that to some degree, with social selling and push notifications? And how much has technology kind of changed the sales industry in some ways?
It's changed it dramatically in some areas, and others it hasn't. So at the end of the day, you're still going to have to pick up the phone. You're still going to have to actually talk to people and engage with people. But we have moved away from a pure make 100 calls and be done. It's now more about touch points. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're contacting, whether it's email, messaging, texting, phone calls, just finding some way to connect with people is more important than, you know, just smiling and dialing. And
I like that, smiling and dialing. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. You know, it used to be like you couldn't leave at the end of the day unless you'd made 100 phone calls. And I'm like, you know, I care more about, like, you know, my rep may have only made 10 phone calls today, but he got 15 emails responded to. He got a couple text messages, you know, a couple orders came through online. Like, he's going on appointments. Appointments for us are critical. Like, we want to get as many face-to-face appointments as possible. So it's about that touch point.
Yep. It makes total sense. So I want to play a little game with you here. I like to call it, what's the scenario? I'm going to present two ideas, like two scenarios for you. And I want you to just figure out, like, which thing you would lean more towards if you were put yourself in the shoes of a young person. So scenario A, you graduate from college, you got a sports management or a business degree or whatever it may be, and you get an opportunity to work in sales for a minor league basketball team. So NBA DL, or I think it's now the Gatorade League or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's a minor league team. Scenario B, you graduate college, same scenario. You got a business degree or sports management degree, and you get the opportunity to work for a major league baseball team or a major league basketball team or whatever. Which way would you lean? Do the minor leagues present opportunities you wouldn't get elsewhere because it's a smaller staff? Or do the pros present an even better opportunity because you get better training? Which kind of way do you lean?
That's a great question. It's not a simple answer. I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Do your homework on who you're going to work for, because I have known some minor league teams that invest more in their people, in training, and in preparing them for their career and success than some major league teams do.
Wow.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, sales is sales. Do you have the potential to make more money at a major league team? Yes, because you're selling a more popular product. You're selling a product that comes with more revenue attached to each ticket. You know, you may be a great minor league seller, but if your ticket is $8 in the minors versus a $50 ticket in the pros, you're going to make more money naturally in the pros.
Yep.
And career advancement opportunities are usually a little more plentiful in the majors because there's so many different layers inside of each company. But I love the minor league experience. I have minor league experience, and you can also learn a lot more there because sometimes you're in sales, but you know what? If you're on a baseball team, you have to go out there and pull tarp, or you might have to put the mascot suit on, but you're going to learn so much more about the business going that route. But yeah,
tough call,
who is
right?
Preparing you. Yeah, it's a tough call. Who is going to prepare you for your career? Who's going to prepare you the most to be successful in whatever area you're going into is what I would factor more heavily.
So that's scenario C. I like that. You kind of pulled a trick on me there, but that's cool. I totally agree with you. So it made me think of one other thing, too, as we were talking there. How much, for right now, you're with the Bucks, and they're an up-and-coming team. You've got a star in the making, well, it's a star, period. You've got a popular coach. You've got a team that's on the rise. So obviously that has an impact on how you're able to sell. But again, if the team isn't struggling, or 5 years ago before you had some of this momentum, it's a totally different scenario. How do you handle the success of the team versus the success of your abilities to make sales?
So, I mean, winning always helps. It truly does. And, you know, I would love for everybody to be on a successful franchise, but that's not always the case. And sports is a roller coaster. Sales is a roller coaster. You're up, you're down, and you can't control it. You know, we tell our reps all the time, control the controllables. You know, like the NBA schedule just came out. I can't control how many weekend dates we get. I can't control what day we have certain opponents, you know, so I just need to control what my business can handle. So that's how we try to operate. We try to insulate ourselves. I mean, if the team is winning, that's going to help, but we design programs that should be successful, whether we're contending for a championship or if we're in a rebuilding year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's almost like it's more about the experience at the arena versus just the winning or losing, I would guess.
Yeah, so a great example from my past is I worked for the Lake Erie Monsters, or now the Cleveland Monsters, the Arena Hockey League team, or I'm sorry, the American Hockey League team in Cleveland. Minor league hockey, step below the NHL. My scout night for the Monsters sold more tickets than my scout night for the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James.
Wow.
And it comes down to value. Are you delivering value to your customers? So my scout night with the hockey team, because it was minor league, we could get away with doing a lot more. So we brought in giant inflatables and kids could skate in the ice. We had autograph sessions and balloon artists and magicians. And we turned it into like a true family fun fest for scouting. And it would move thousands of tickets. But on the Cavaliers, we couldn't do all that kind of stuff. We could offer a game ticket, and it was usually in the last couple rows. So people came out. They wanted to see LeBron.
But that was.
But it comes down to value. It truly comes down to value.
It perfect sense, and I can imagine a family night at a minor league game has a lot, or a scout night, sorry, has a much more robust experience for the kids at a cheaper price, which is really, again, you're selling the experience. So I want to finish up. I want to finish up with something I like to call the lightning round. So I'm just going to throw five quick questions at you, and I want you to give me your first thought off the top of your head. I am not going to talk about the Bucks or even the NBA because I don't want to get you in trouble with your PR staff or getting mad at us for you inadvertently sharing any team secrets. And I don't care if you wear boxers or briefs, so I'm not going to ask you anything like that. So you're in a safe place here. Are you ready?
All right, I'm ready.
Okay. What's the coolest thing? What's the coolest thing to do in Milwaukee?
Coolest thing to do in Milwaukee.
Outside of going to a Bucks game.
Milwaukee is an amazing town. It's the city of festivals. So every weekend in the summer, there is a different festival. So I was just at Irish Fest. We do German Fest, Italian Fest, Greek Fest. Summer Fest is the world's largest music festival. So every weekend in Milwaukee, there's a different reason to go out, be with people, see good music. And I'm going to live up to the stereotype. This is a beer town. Milwaukee loves beer, and there's beer at every single occasion. So if you love to socialize, this is the place for you.
Well, that pivots nicely to my next question. Any craft beer or Milwaukee's best?
um, Well, our offices are inside the old Schlitz Brewery.
Oh, all right.
There's a bar in our office, or not in our office, like on the floor below ours, that serves $2 Schlitz at all times, and it's delicious.
That's not bad.
That being said, Miller Coors is a huge partner of ours, and my brother works for them. I love a good Miller Lite. I love a High Life. I love Blue Moon, so I'm good with all that stuff.
All right, that makes sense. If you were starting college today, would you get a sports management degree or a straight business degree?
Knowing what I know now, if you're going in the sales route, I might lean more towards business, or I'd have to make sure I research if the sport management program covers business,
right?
Versus if I want to be an athletic director, or if I want to go into a different part of the sports industry. That's, you know, I had a general sport management undergrad and kinesiology undergrad, and it was more of a broad spectrum. And so I would love something that specializes more on the business side of the industry.
Okay. Makes sense. And if you live in Wisconsin, what's more important, riding a Harley or liking cheese?
Well, you can do both at the same time.
That's true. You could.
Cheese is everywhere. We love our cheese curds. Deep fried cheese is at every bar. It's at every festival. It's in everything. But you can't go two steps in this town without hearing the loud roar of a Harley. Our mascot, Bango, he rides a Harley across the court at every single game.
Yeah.
So you really can't separate the two.
See, you just took my bonus question. I was going to ask you what's the name of the Bucks mascot, but clearly you knew that one.
Our Bucks, yeah, his name is Bango,
which is
our old radio announcer used to say Bango anytime anybody hit like a mid-range jumper, and so we named the mascot after that.
See, that's the inside story you can't get anywhere else. I like that.
Exactly.
I really want to thank Carl for taking the leap with me on this show and being patient as I stunk up the joint. So much good info in here, and that is our overarching goal day in and day out. We want to provide you the actionable advice that will help you thrive in your sports career. So many people talk in theory, you know? They talk about things and kind of theorize, and maybe they don't have a ton of hands-on experience themselves, but they're trying to position themselves like they do. I don't know. I've always gone at this and said, keep this simple. Actionable advice. Teach people something they can do. Share with them something they might not know that will help them. Not just theorize about stuff, really get into the nuts and bolts of what happens out there, how they should do things, what they can do. And that's always been our philosophy. Thanks for always listening. And remember, really cool thing, tomorrow night, December 6th, I'm going Facebook Live for the first time, direct from our private Facebook group. If you're not a member yet, you really should be. It's over 1,000 people. There are people in there networking. They're all focused on sports careers. They're sharing their successes, asking questions, sharing their challenges too. And it's a really supportive and interactive group. So go to the search in Facebook for the Work in Sports podcast, join that group. And then tomorrow night I'm going Facebook Live. So we'll be able to interact and be able to answer questions and just have a good old time. Hopefully I'll be better at that, which is my first time on Facebook Live. Hopefully I'll be better at that than I am for the first podcast episode and interview with Carl. But again, great advice from Carl. So hopefully I'll see a lot of you tomorrow night. Have a good one, guys. Bye.